Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
We're here with episode 66, not to be confused with Order 66. There will be no Jedis harmed in the recording of this broadcast.
Yeah, that we know of. Intentionally. Their ears may bleed a little.
Yeah. So what are we smoking this week, Brad?
So this week we've got the Altadez Gispert, the Intensio.
Yeah, it's like Gispert is a brand under Altadez. It's kind of been known for their milder cigars. And now they're trying to add a more full-bodied, full-strength cigar to that lineup. And they've called in someone, smoked a few of their cigars. They've always been great. This was actually made by AJ Fernandez for Altadez.
Yeah, and so far I got to say that it's been a really good cigar. You've got the, it's a dark Connecticut broadleaf wrapper, Nicaraguan binder, and Nicaraguan and Dominican filler. So, I've been a really big fan of a lot of the Nicaraguan stuff that's been coming out. So, I mean, this is right up my alley, and I got to say, just lighting up and getting acquainted with this cigar, I think this is the first one I've smoked, but, right off the bat, I mean, it definitely strikes me as full-bodied. I mean, it's spicy. It's everything that I would look for, and I'm really enjoying it as of right now.
Yeah, and like I said, it being made by AJ Fernandez, and I've watched, he's been doing a lot of, guest work with other cigar manufacturers, other than his own line of cigars, and they're always a hit, and also always at a good price point. I mean, this is a mid $7 range stick.
Yeah, I mean, it may vary a little bit, from brick and mortar to brick and mortar, but I mean, I would say a very decent and very economical smoke.
Yeah,
and that's one of the things I'm really starting to, really enjoy is there's been a lot of what I would consider low priced, mid six, to, $7-$8 range smokes that have just been absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to buy the most expensive thing in the shop to get a good cigar. I mean, a lot of times the mid range or even, held sub mid range price cigars are damn good smokes.
It's just, in fact, I was having that conversation earlier today that, oftentimes people will go out and spend the most amount of money thinking they are getting the best cigar. But, when it comes to cigars, they're not created equally. And, I guess it's about that same debate, when it comes to, people having a misconception that don't really smoke cigars, that the only good cigars are from Cuba. And it's like, get with the program. Yeah. Get your weight up.
So this week, we're going to be talking about To Catch a Predator, right? The people with the panel vans and whatnot that do bad stuff on the internet.
I don't think that's the predators we have in mind. I mean, I don't know about you, but the predators that we're going to be discussing, you absolutely need to call in a strike force.
Exactly. StrikeForceEnergy.com. Use your promo code CigarNerds for 20% off your orders, your subscriptions, whatever. I just got the big-ass bottle. And believe me, that's the only way I can stay up at night watching all these movies before us to do a podcast is I'm like constantly strike forced out. And if you're going to go to the jungle with Arnold and hunt predators, you better call in a strike force.
Absolutely. And a big fucking one at that. So you're going to need the big bottle because only you're supporting yourself, but you got to keep your team going too.
If you're really feeling all, do the strike force challenge. Just do it like a straight up shot glass full. Don't water it down at all. Just like straight mix. See how that does you.
Absolutely.
We'll have to post a video. We need to try that. Post a video to prove our manliness here. See who can go the longest without making a face.
I always make a face. So therefore, you will not know if I'm making a face.
Good point.
I, like the Predator, I am stealthy in my camouflage.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time to talk about probably one of the most legendary, you know, villains of a movie, the Predator. You know, it's like the big three. When you talk about 80s action horror movies, you know, it's always Terminator, Alien, and Predator.
I mean, well, I mean,
that's,
you know,
the big three.
You know, the whole, you know, kind of xenomorph concept and everything else. You really have to put Predator smack dab into that category. I mean, you know, we're not really going to talk about, you know, the Alien versus Predator, but, you know, they could absolutely kind of coincide in the same universe and tie, you know, in together. And so, you know, it's not too far stretched on how that premise came to be a thing. I just think it could have been executed a little better.
And even speaking of, you know, weird connections between Predator and Alien, Stan Winston said he actually got the idea for the design of the Predator because his original, you know, designs were very different. It's much more of a kind of a gangly, you know, more alien-esque monster. But since he was going up against pretty much the entire cast of this movie were all bodybuilders or whatnot, you know, it needed to be a burlier monster to be more imposing. And he was on a plane with James Cameron, director of Aliens. And when he was trying to come up with, like, you know, new monster ideas, and he's like, you know what? I've always wanted to see a monster with mandibles. So that kind of inspired Stan to add the tradition, the, you know, weird ass mouth from the Predator with his conversation with him. So yeah, Aliens kind of helped this along at one point or another.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's kind of obvious that.
And there's always been references to aliens throughout. You know, in the second movie, when we get to talking about the movie, you get to the Predator's trophy room. There is a xenomorph skull on the wall with the other trophies. So, you know, it's kind of been like a little tongue in cheek thing that those two, you know, which eventually we did get the crossover movies, but weren't that great. But still, you know, it eventually happened. But yeah. We're going to talk about the origins, because this year marks the 30th anniversary of Predator, which came out in 1987.
Yeah, and, you know, Predator's always kind of had a special place in my heart. I mean, I going back to my childhood, I think I may have played the video game on Sega Genesis before I ever actually got to see the Predator movies.
Like, yeah, and even the
and even then, game. I think I had to, like, sneak around and, like, jack the VHS from, like, my aunt or something, and, like, you know, because my parents weren't going to have any part of me watching that as a kid. Which, the first one wasn't bad, but.
Yeah, I never played the Sega version. I remember playing the shit out of the arcade game, Alien versus Predator, where you were Space Marines and, like, two or three different Predators and just fighting just waves and waves of aliens. That was always a fun game.
Yeah, and, you know, from what I can remember, I mean, it's been a long time since I played the Sega games, but, you know, you would think that the Predator, you know, and maybe, you know, somewhere he makes more of a debut. I never, you know, had a Sega of my own to really spend an hours playing, but, you know, it was more like you were fighting, you know, army guys and stuff like that, more so than, you know, what you were going against the alien beast. So maybe he's like the final end boss or something, but.
Yeah, 1987's Predator, directed by John McTiernan, starring, of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger as Dutch. Arnold leads a team of commandos who specialize in rescue operations. You know, he even makes the point that, you know, when he meets CIA agent Carl Weathers, Dylan, that, like, you know, he's like, hey, why don't you pass up on this other mission? He's like, because we're rescue guys, we're not assassins. You know, he trying to make, you know, they're not just soldiers of fortune. He's
not just out here to try to kill everything.
Good, like, dudes.
We're, you know, legitimately trying to do something positive, I guess, is a good spin on it.
Yeah. And as in most 80s action movies, it involves guerrillas and, you know, South American dictators and whatnot.
Didn't this take place in Bolivia or something?
Never say the actual country it's in.
Like, I wanted to say that, you know, I had flashbacks to Ghost Recon Wildlands, and I was like, I remember that tree.
Yeah, supposedly it takes place in Val Verde in Central America's Northern Triangle. But yeah, it never really, really, you know, explicitly says where it is. But, you know, insert generic Spanish-speaking jungle people, and you can pretty much set it in any country, as in the 80s.
Yes.
Because, yeah, in the 80s, it was all South American terrorists. We didn't get to, you know, ISIS and you know, Middle Eastern terrorists until the 90s. In the 80s, it was Russians or South Americans.
Yes. But yeah, I mean, you know, as far as like the overall skill set of Predator and everything else, I mean, it's rather interesting. Like, I really like the take on, you know, the whole thermal vision aspect of things, and then how, you know, he has the ability to kind of like analyze and decipher a little bit and be like, all right, is this friendly or is it, you know, a threat? So it's not like I'm here to just kill everything.
Yeah, it's because the Predator really isn't just a mindless monster. It is truly a hunter. He has rules of engagement. Like I said, he, you know, and this movie too, the way it was made, it could almost be too separate movies. You don't really even see the Predator until maybe 30-40 minutes.
No, you're well into the movie before, you know. It's yeah. More so people are just mysteriously dying. And I mean,
even before they get into that, you know, the whole first quarter of the movie is all about Arnold's team going in to rescue this supposed, you know, chopper that went down and with some kind of diplomat in it. But then along the way, they find other soldiers have been there before them and they've been freaking skinned alive and stuff, but you keep shots of the Predator watching them, but there is really no interaction. It's almost like, I'm gonna watch these dudes. They look like badasses, but, you know, I have to figure out if they're worthy to hunt. You know, it's just like, you know, kind of like an audition process, because he's like, I ain't gonna hunt like, you know, a freaking rabbit. I need something that's gonna be a challenge.
I mean, you know, the Predator is kind of the ultimate big game hunter.
Yeah, and this movie, so big, it, you know, spawned 2 U.S. governors.
2 U.S. governors. There was novels spawned from this. There was the video games. Like, wasn't there even like a comic book franchise or something?
There were several comic book crossovers. One of my favorite was, and they did like two different runs of it, Batman versus Predator. And that's probably one of my favorite comics, you know. And it's like, you know, the Predator shows up in Gotham in the first series, you know, it's a single Predator and that Batman eventually takes out. But then the second series of it, a whole like group of Predators come back to challenge Batman. And, you know, like I said, it's kind of cool seeing like that's something if they're going to make, you know, now that we have Alien versus Predator as a movie. You know, if they could get it together, a Batman versus Predator, that would be a badass movie.
Ben Affleck versus Predator.
Oh, it's got to be better than the stuff DC's doing now.
Anything's still better than Batman versus Superman.
Exactly. You know, because Superman fought the aliens. You know, Batman got to fight the Predators. Superman fought the aliens. So it was... Each of them got their own DC comic book crossovers.
Yeah, and I got to say, like, you know, kind of just talking about the iconicness, like, one of the things that always stood out to me, too, when talking about the Predator was the green ooze, you know, in his blood. Like, yes. That was always, like, probably, like, one of the easiest achieved special effects, because I think all they used was, like, KY jelly and whatever the stuff is that's inside of glow sticks, which...
Yeah.
Are glow sticks still a thing? Like,
yeah, I mean, anybody goes to a rave, or if you're in your survival, everybody's bailout bag survival kit, you got to throw a couple, you know, because glow sticks don't run out of batteries. I mean, you don't have to keep replacing the batteries in them things. You know, if anything goes wrong, just snap a couple. But yeah, this, and the, like you said, you know, the jelly and the glow sticks, because this was made in an era pre-digital effects. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's some, you know, there was some kind of, you know, early, but not the CGI heavy stuff that we would get nowadays. And I think that's one thing that made the, you know, well, you got the CGI of the freaking weird silhouette, you know, the mirage active camouflage that the Predator uses. But other than that, you know, the creature itself was a guy in a suit. And that guy was, Peter Hall, which, if you want to see him without the suit, he's also the guy who flies the helicopter. The yeah, the helicopter pilot that drops him off is also the Predator. Which, funny enough, is he was the second choice, because at one point they were wanting to have Jean-Claude Van Damme play the Predator.
Yeah, and yes. Like, because I was... like, doing a little bit of research and just reading, and, like, they were trying to, you know, figure out, like, how tall the Predator should be. And a lot of the, you know, actors that got named to, you know, could be viable Predators, like, were too short. Like, yeah. You know, they didn't quite, you know, have the stature. That
could, you know, move and make him, you know, agile and ninja-like. So they'd called in Van Damme, but he kept bitching about the suit being too hot and passing out and... Also, you know, he's got a big ego and didn't want to be in a movie where his face wasn't seen. And eventually they replaced him with Peter Hall, because they just really needed somebody bigger to stand it. Because, you know, let's talk about Arnold's team. You got Arnold playing Dutch, Carl Weathers playing Dylan, Billy Duke as Mac, Richard Chavez as Ponch, Governor Jesse Ventura as Blaine, Sonny Liddell as Billy, and Lethal Weapon director Shane Black as Hawkins. But with the exception of Hawkins, most of these dudes were like former wrestlers or bodybuilders. So these were some big dudes. So to make something that's going to be a threat to them, you need a big dude.
Yes. Yeah. And absolutely. And like, I just...
Anybody that can pick Arnold up by his neck is something you don't want to fuck with.
Could you imagine, like, I would love to be on the rigging crew, like, just to, you know, create all the stuff to be able to, like, make that look, you know, like, you got freaking, you know, Andre the Giant coming out there, like, just, or something, you know.
And I it's uncredited, but supposedly, whatever, Peter Cullen, Chewbacca did some of the voice work of the the Predator. Because if anybody can make, like, unearthly sound effects, it's him.
But, I mean, you know, well, I guess we'll get into it. Like, that was kind of the cool thing about Predator, too, was, you know, just, you know, how it communicates. And that's such an iconic sound. I mean, that's up there with the Jason Voorhees, you know, like when you think of Predator, like... That's
that clicking
noise,
you know, almost insect-like.
I don't know how to replicate that, but
yeah, and then, you know, him slowly learning, you know, how to speak and imitate his prey, you know, which would, you know, helps him, you know, lure in people to get, you know, it's kind of like us using, you know,
like
turkey,
you know,
calls,
turkey
or,
calls,
you know,
or deer, you know, deer calls, or anything
yeah,
else.
It's very similar to a hunter. Yeah, and I got in freaking before they get into, you know, fighting the Predator. Just the interaction of the team too is kind of hilarious. The testosterone that was on that set with all these big burly ass dudes, and I think I've seen so many memes of Carl Weathers and Arnold Schwarzenegger doing that like handshake at the beginning. He's like, "Dylan, you son of a bitch, friggin' high." Yes. Oh. And of course, freaking Jesse Ventura with the backpack minigun is probably one of the most badass, you know, weapon scenes in like any movie.
Yeah, that was actually pretty cool. Like that's when I was like, all right, they're up against some shit. Like,
yeah, because once they are able to take out the gorillas, they find out this was all bullshit, that they were trying to retrieve some CIA documents or whatnot. And they just happen to come across this thing in the jungle that slowly starts picking off the team as they're trying to escape. And it's kind of cool because these guys are the best. These are some hard ass guys that have seen some shit, and for them to be scared, that really, you know, shows how fucked they are.
Well, I mean, you know, like. I mean, the whole stealth aspect of the Predator, I think, is just so brilliantly done. Because, yes, you know, if you have an enemy that you can see and engage, it's a lot less menacing than, dude, this guy just took a spear to the chest from a tree canopy. Like,
yes. And like
psychologically, you don't come back from that.
Like, yeah. Like the first member of the team to get killed, Hawkins, you know. It's only person witnesses is this gorilla girl that they captured, Anna, and her description of it was like the jungle came alive and took him. I mean, that's some creepy shit, and pretty accurate too. If you're seeing, you know, him in his camouflage, it just, yeah, it looks like the jungle came to life and took a guy. It's like a freaking ghost.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, that's. I don't know. I mean, that's been some of the, like, just playing video games in general. Like, that is always, oftentimes, the most menacing enemy is the invisible ones.
Yes.
Like,
and how many times of that active camouflage stuff has been reproduced in movies since then? It's like, that, you know, that's always the new, like, you know, invisible ninjas, invisible robots, invisible cars, if you're doing James Bond. It's like... That became the new hotness after Predator, and well, still continues to be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can, you know, even taking it to, like, architecture and stuff like that. Like, there's been a lot of companies now, like, you know, camouflaging, using mirrors and stuff yeah. like that to, you know, hide, like, oh, there's a fort there in that tree, but...
Or even the Marvel stuff now, S.H.I.E.L.D., helicarriers and stuff using the active camouflage. It's like,
so, I mean, we're still seeing it a lot across, you know, Hollywood, but seeing some real-world examples of it as well. I mean...
And I remember it was the Knights of the Old Republic game. Some of the Sith assassins had that, and it was kind of like Predator. You'd be like, see like a shimmer in the corner of the room. You're like, oh, fuck, there's somebody in here.
That are, you know, Doom, I think, is one game that, you know,
yes, the
really utilized
freaking pinkies,
that.
Too, yes. Are a bitch.
Like, you'd just be walking around and all of a sudden chewing on your face, like, WTF.
Yeah. Oh. But yeah, the scene that is pretty much iconic than that I've seen in it's probably one of my favorite scenes is when Jesse Ventura's character of Blaine gets taken out with the plasma cannon, just blows a huge hole in his chest, and Mac runs up, empties his gun, his M6 belt-fed M60, drops it, picks up the minigun, and is like, lays waste to the jungle, and like everybody else comes up like, we don't know what we're shooting at, but we're shooting, and like just freaking just like yes. pretty much just, you know, cuts down like all the trees, and he's just so panicked that even when it runs out of bullet, he holds the trigger down for like a good another 30 seconds of the barrel spinning, and they're all like, what the fuck was it? He's like, I don't know. But then they find the, you know, the green goo on a leaf, and they're like, if it bleeds, we can kill it.
Yeah. I don't know. I think, you know, probably that scene's very memorable. The one for me is the whole, you know, spinal columns being removed and stuff. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, that's just a sign of, you know, I mean, you know, which you find out later on that, you know, Predator as a hunter, you know, have the trophy collection.
Yeah, and in fact, when they finally get the girl to tell them, like, you know what she's seeing as people are disappearing and whatnot, she tells, like, a legend from her village that, you know, on particularly hot summers or whatever, a demon will come. They call it El Demonico que Hasa Trotelos de los Hombres, which translate to demon who makes trophies of men. Fairly accurate.
Damn.
I mean, like I said, he's basically, like, you know, the equivalent of us going out, killing a deer, and putting some antlers on the wall. You know, he's got... He's pretty much a big game trophy, but instead of being, you know, on a safari in Africa, he's, you know, an alien coming to hunt us.
I don't know which...
you know, man is the ultimate prey.
Which I think that's kind of cool, and, you know, from a certain aspect that, you know, once we start talking about Predator 2 and they start introducing the whole voodoo magic aspect of thing, like, you see a lot of, you know, like, when I think voodoo, like, you know, skulls and, you know, like, freaking, you know, on stakes and stuff like that, so.
And it's like, you know, he...
Fucking voodoo magic,
like
I said,
he has those rules of engagement. Like, he won't attack someone who is unarmed, because to him, it's there's no sport in it. It's the ultimate, and, you know, hunting's one thing, but when the deer start shooting back at you, that's a whole new level. So, I mean, he's on, like, you know, the next level. That's why I kind of always like playing paintball or airsoft or something, because it's, you know, a whole lot different when the things you're stalking are shooting back at you. It just is the added level of difficulty.
War.
Yeah. Oh. But yeah, and then the scene where they, and that's the thing too about him too, is, like I said, he really only kills, he could have come in and wiped out their entire squad in, like, one hit, but he picks them off one by one because he's like, once I've made my kill, I gotta go clean it. And when, you know, they never found Hawkins. He snatched Hawkins before they get him. But when Blaine dies, you know, they take the body with him, and, you know, he comes into their camp and steals the body out from under him. And that's, you know, how they kind of realize that he's been moving through the trees, because he's not setting off any of the tripwires and booby traps. But still, then, you know, he likes it. He could have come and killed them then, but he's like, nope, I'm here to pick up my trophy. I'll be back for the rest of you fuckers later.
Well, I mean, I wonder how much of it is, you know, too, like,
the intimidation factor. Of,
well, the, you know, intimidation, and then just the psychology of it all. Like, you know, I mean, and I think, well, we'll talk about it more when we get there. Because I think, you know, Predator 2 alludes to it, but the, you know, movie Predators from 2010 really, you know, kind of goes down that path.
Yeah, because him being able to come into their, you know, booby-trapped camp and just take a body without any of them noticing, because, you know, he kind of distracts them with a boar coming through the camp. That's just a thing, like, I can take you whenever I want. You know, it's really playing some psychological warfare with these guys.
Yeah, I don't know. I it's like, you know, sometimes, like, I think of hunting and stuff like that, and it's like, you know, most of the time you want the creature to be relaxed or whatever, you know, right? Like, if you're deer hunting and you're planning on having the meat process, like, you want as quick and clean of a kill as possible. But it's like with Predator, like, it's almost truly for sport, because...
Yeah, he wants the added challenge. Yeah, he wants them to know, I'm coming for you. Then, like I said, after that, they have the whole where they, you know, set up a whole booby trap for him, and they're like, where they've trying to funnel him into an area where, you know, they figure out he can detect their metal trip wires, because, of course, the heat vision, metal heats up, so that's probably how he's seeing so they start making, you know, trip, you know, wires out of vines and, you know, old school booby traps, and try to lure him in. And that scene where, like, you know, they're all sitting there and he's like not coming in, and Arnold starts creeping out trying to become bait. And the thing, like, pops the trap right behind him. Like, he was, like, right there in the midst of him. They had, like, no clue he was there until he hit the the net. And then at that point, he's kind of pissed off, because, all right, I'm not hunting you one at a time anymore. I'm killing all you motherfuckers.
But, I mean, it is kind of, you know, interesting, too. Like, you know, the whole aspect, like toward the end of the movie, you know, where it's, you know, Dutch and the Predator, and like the Predator removes his mask and it's like hand to hand combat ensues. Like,
yeah, because at that point, you know, after he takes out pretty much the remainder of the team except for Arnold and the girl, and he, you know, Arnold's like, don't pick up a gun. He won't go to the, get to the chopper. Yes. Yeah. Anytime you've heard that, you know, made fun of, because Arnold says it like three times in this movie. Do it now. Get to the chopper. But, you know, I like how, you know, Billy, like the Indian tracker that's with him, you know, he finally has enough. He's like, you know, drops his weapon, pulls out a knife and tries to challenge him hand to hand, and does not go well for him. But, you know,
respect increased by two.
Yeah. When Arnold's injured, falls in the mud and stuff, and finally realizes, oh, he can't see me if I'm cold, he goes full MacGyver, setting up all these booby traps and going real, you know, makes a bow and arrow and spears and rigs explosives that are, you know, non-metallic, so he won't see him coming, and, you know, really tries to, you know, play him at his own game, really. So he's like, hey, you're invisible, asshole? I'm invisible now. But that level of preparedness and stuff, you know, where he actually kind of injures the Predator, you know, that's when he's like, all right, you're on a next level, you have earned my respect, I'm gonna fight you as a warrior instead of prey, so I'm gonna drop all my gear, my plasma rifles and everything else, and then let's do this like men. And then, like, and that's when it, like, you know, gets really cool with him, because you're not used to seeing Arnold get his ass kicked.
Yeah, like that to me was like I you know, really anticipated, you know, Arnold just immediately saving the day and that, but no. Like,
no.
It goes to off, he's like, shit. And
you're one ugly motherfucker. But, yeah, because that kind of parallels the end of Terminator, where you're used to seeing Arnold being the unstoppable force and people are just, like, trying to survive and get away from him. But this time, Arnold's the one who is, you know, weak and having to deal with an unstoppable force. It's kind of funny seeing that flipped.
You know, just, you know, and like Terminator, you know, technology played such an importance. But here, it's really going to a primal instinct mentality of just, you know, basic survival. And
yeah, because guns, like, almost have no effect on him, you know, except when he gets shot in the... That scene where he gets shot in the leg and they're all camping out in the jungle and he's got his cool little alien first aid kit and is like having to repair himself. But like when he hits himself with the painkiller or whatever, and just like that scream he makes is like, everyone is like, the fuck is that? That's something you don't want to hear when you're in the jungle.
I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's probably aliens.
Yeah. And then when, like I said, Arnold finally, you know, is able to trap him and injure him, he pulls out the wrist nuke thing, and then that laugh where he's basically, because to back up a minute, for some reason, Hawkins tells the worst dirty jokes in this movie. It's like they're the dirtiest of dad jokes. That's how bad they are. Just so he can try to make Billy laugh, because he's like stone faced dude, does not laugh at anything, and he finally gets him with one, and he laughs his ass off, and so he's like imitating his laugh, but that laugh coming out of a Predator is creepy as fuck.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I don't know. I mean, I just thought it was, you know, the ending is just...
It's like I said, the worst dirty jokes. Go back and watch Predator, because I forgot how bad those Hawking's jokes were until I watched it again. It's like the definition of like dad joke, except dirty.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's Bob Saget on steroids.
Yeah, pretty much.
And we're not talking America's Funniest Home Videos.
But a cool thing about, you know, Shane Black being in this as Hawking's, you know, he had made Lethal Weapon, and pretty much, you know, some of his friends in this was like, you hooked him up with this part, so he kind of is an educational thing where not only does he get to act a little, he gets to watch, you know, a more experienced director and how he does things to, you know, further his career as a director. And things to come full circle, I think it's scheduled for March of next year, we're getting another Predator movie, but this one is actually going to be directed by Shane Black. So he started off as you know, guy who dies cool. number one.
You know, I mean, what better way to get your source material than, you know, to be hands-on?
Yeah. And there's, it says, not a reboot. The events of the first two movies, you know, will be referenced. And there's even rumor that Arnold will be reappearing as Dutch, probably just, you know, a cameo or something, you know.
You know, one of the things that I always wanted, you know, from the franchise, it's like an origin, you know, sort of the Predators. Like, and I don't know if maybe some of the novels and stuff alluded to it or, you know, go into detail, but, you know, like it really just kind of jumps in, like...
Well, and if you watch the first of the Aliens versus Predators movie, it goes into a little bit about that. There's like a temple in Antarctica where prehistoric, you know, man, like before, like, you know, the Earth was filled with humans, you know, the Predators kind of use this planet as a hunting planet, kind of like when you see the Predators movie where they have their, you know, game reserve that they're hunting people on. That's kind of how Earth started off. And, you know, of course, there was a temple where they grew aliens because that was, you know, supposed to be like it was like a whatever. They
used it as kind of humans just get too badass. And it's like, all right, well, you know what? Instead of trying to tackle humans on their territory, we're going to bring the humans to our territory.
They just get lazy. They're like, we're trying to go into Earth. That shit's too far away. Let's just go steal Earthlings and bring them here. Oh. But yeah, they, you know, like I said, there's a real, you know, we know, it doesn't really show it in this movie. The second movie, Predator 2, which came out in 1990. Directed by Stephen Hopkins. That one, no Arnold. It was, you know, apparently they didn't want to pay him enough to come back and do another movie, but there are references to what happened in the first movie. But in this one, we do see a little bit more of the Predator history, that they have been coming here for years and years because, you know, at one point, Danny Glover, makes it too as the star of the second movie, who plays Mike Harrington, a LAPD, like, whatever, violent crimes unit director. When he finally faces off the Predators and sees their ship, there's trophies and stuff, but then there's also artifacts from, I guess, you know, memorable kills. And you know, like, there's guns from, like, you know, freaking flintlock pistols from the early 1800s and stuff. So, you know, it's like, oh, these guys have been coming here for years and doing this, not just, well, you know, when Anna talks about, you know, the rumor about her village and the demons and stuff. So, but yeah, you don't really realize how far back in the history they've been using Earth as a hunting ground.
Yeah. And I thought it was really interesting, you know, we'll talk about the trophy aspect a little bit later on, 'cause that's really, really late in the movie. So
yeah, Predator 2 starts off with
got a freaking turf war. These people literally be beefing over turf. To quote Cards Against Humanity.
Yeah. But yeah, Danny Glover is in this with, and he's a kind of a badass in the police force, which is also kind of funny because up until this point, we've always seen him as Murtaugh, the guy who's getting too old for this shit. And now he's like an action hero in his own right in this movie. Also, like I said, the opening scene, there's a war with these Colombian gang.
Yeah, you got the Colombians and the Jamaicans originally.
Well, in this fight, it's like a couple cops, you know, pulled over some gang members, and a whole fight ensues, and they're pinned down, can't get out. And Danny Glover just like rolls up there in the middle of it and takes out four or five guys so they can, you know, rescue those two people. And of course, the Predator's watching and kind of is like, oh shit, this guy might be worth hunting. And in fact, they even at one point, you know, references like the, you know, he's on safari and you're the lion.
Well, I mean, I guess it's only fitting. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of crazy. Like, you know, all right, you got the war going on. You've got the two downed officers, and there's literally only three people in the city of Los Angeles. And I want to say, this is another reason not to go to California. Not only do they get disasters and everything else, but, you know, they also have to deal with predators. Does your lighter need fuel, my friend?
I think it does.
Here, pass it over.
But yeah, Danny Danny Glover, like, this movie was kind of a, we've already talked about Lethal Weapon, but this was kind of a Lethal Weapon reunion movie, because not only do you have Danny Glover in this opening, you know, scene with them fighting gang members, there's a SWAT team sergeant there, and it's the same guy who plays the captain in Lethal Weapon. And then also the supposed DEA, but probably CIA operative that is there, pretty much, you know, they say they're investigating the gang warfare, but they're really trying to capture a predator to take his technology or whatnot, is led by Gary Busey, who was the bad guy in the first Lethal Weapon movie. So yeah, it's like, you know, all the ex, you know, Lethal Weapon guys coming back together for to fight aliens. I guess Riggs was off that day.
Damn.
I just kept waiting for him to get, say, "I'm getting too old for this shit," while he's fighting the Predator. That's the only thing that was missing from that movie.
I'm sick of all these motherfucking Predators on this one.
Yeah, this movie didn't make as much money. The first one was made for like $15 million, made around 98. This one was made for, you know, 35, only made 57. It kind of got bad reviews when it first came out, but it's since then kind of become a cult classic. I mean, it makes a lot of the, you know, best of lists and whatnot.
Which is kind of weird. I mean, I'm just kind of wondering if it was people's mindsets or what. But I mean, you know, going back, I still find Predator 2 to be a highly enjoyable movie. You know, in fact, I was having you know, a conversation with some folks earlier today, and you know, we were all kind of talking about that, of, you know, oftentimes how like critics and stuff, like my opinions typically don't mesh at all with, you know,
yeah,
like, you know, a lot of times I'll find myself, you know, looking for people reviews or something more so than I will any of the renowned critics.
But I gotta say, the one thing that rewatching this movie is so ridiculous is, you know, his hotshot group of cowboy detectives, the weapons they're carrying are ridiculous. Like, they all have those 1980s laser sights that were like the size of a mag light on their guns. And he even carries
that's not a scope on the pistol.
No, that is a laser sight. And he's even carrying like a big ass, like, chromed out Desert Eagle 50 cal as his primary weapon, and has a sweet trunk full of guns. I'm like, I want his patrol car with that, you know,
which is kind of weird.
Fully loaded,
like, well,
trunk,
I mean,
of guns.
There was a large plethora of nothing but pistols. I was like, you know, if you know you're in LA and you're going against, you know, let's, you know, cartel members or whatever, like, I would want a shotgun. I would want, you know, something
with
some automatic fire. Well,
he has his cool
pistol
grip shotgun with the holster and everything that he pulls out later, but yeah.
But I do kind of like the fact, you know, where, you know, he's like, you know, takes a few of the vest and drapes it over the passenger side of the car so, you know, he can just whip it into battle and, you know, have a little bit of that added protection so shit's not just coming through the glass, but...
And I like when they're like, you know, trying to write him up or complain, and they're going over his record. It's like, oh, he's had so many, you know, whatever, excessive use of force complaints. He's wrecked 11 patrol cars. He's done all this other shit. He's basically like the Riggs of this movie. Instead of him being the straight-laced cop, he's now the rogue cop. But at
he's
same
an
time,
internal affairs nightmare.
Yeah. But at the same time, they said he's also got the highest felony arrest record in the department and has gotten 14 commendations. So, you know, you can question his methods, but they obviously work.
But I do got to say, like,
in 80s gang run LA, as yes, you know, it's always depicted in the movies of this era.
But, you know, like, so immediately, you know, after, you know, the two downed police officers get rescued and the cartel members retreat into that building, that freaking loadout that they have, like, it is,
oh, yeah,
floor to ceilings, decked out armory.
Barrett,
like,
50 cals, machine guns out the wang, and then Predator shows up and, like, wastes everybody.
Yes.
And, like, and yeah, just the, because they don't really show the, that's one thing they it's kind of cool in this movie, is there's certain sequences where they don't show the Predator doing his thing, or at least early on in the movie. They just show the aftermath. I mean, they walk into this room full of hardcore killers, and everyone's dead, and there's just, like, tons and tons of spent rounds on the floor, but nothing. You know, he's, and that's like, this predator.
Did you notice all the blood was red?
Yeah. And like splattered everywhere.
Yes. I was like, holy shit. Like, how many gallons of fake blood did it, like, shit is smeared on the walls, the ceiling.
Yeah. And in the predator, again, played by Peter Hall, but, you know, obviously it's a different predator. So they've, you know, done some things to, you know, signify that, yeah, it's the same species, different guy, because this predator has got a little bit more teeth and, you know, a little bit nastier. And he also, his preferred weapons are different. Like, you know, the first predator, he, you know, used the plasma shoulder thing and his, you know, claws. But this predator has a freaking spear, flying disc things. And this one's a little bit more high tech, where the first one was a little bit more, you know, savage with his technology, you know, a little bit more low tech in his stuff.
I would say more primal.
Yeah, where this one is like, all right, I'm in the city, I'm a little bit more high tech predator.
Yeah, and you know, and I like the fact too on, you know, like I think for me, you know, one of the scenes that really stands out is, you know, when the predator like tries to flee and is getting away after being injured, and he breaks into, you know, that window into the bathroom and just rips out chunks of the freaking drywall and like starts, you know, meshing up a, you know, concoction, like, you know, once again breaks out the badass first aid kit. But, you know, when he, you know, freaking puts that plaster mixture onto the severed limb, and that scream there was probably like one of the like most, and the freaking old lady like, yes, wake up, there's somebody in the bathroom, and we, yeah, don't grab a shotgun, we don't do anything else, what do? Go for the broom. And I'm, yeah, like, that would so and, be my grandparents.
And she has like the best, because previous to this, Danny Glover is chasing him, and he basically knocks him off a building, and he's got him by the arm, and the whatever his flying ninja star is stuck in the wall, and the predator starts trying to set off the little, you know, arm nuke thing like he did with Arnold when he got trapped, but Danny, you know, grabs the disc and chops his arm off and breaks the bomb. So yeah, when he's in there doing his thing, and you know, Danny Glover like pursues him, climbs down, who is afraid of heights too, climbs down the pole and gets into the room. Right after the predator like runs out, the old lady's like sees him coming. He's like, "Don't worry, I'm the police." She's like, "I don't think he gives a fuck." Yes. Love that line.
I mean, that's almost like, you know, the little boy that sees Predator and it's like, "Want some candy?"
Yeah, which was creep. This is toward the end of it. Let's back up a little bit to some earlier sequences. The Predator on the train, because you know. In this group of...
Every time I go and take Marta and it goes through a tunnel, that's what I have flashbacks to.
But yeah, it's... I mean, there's a whole sequence where these gang members are trying to rob somebody on a train, and like half the train pulls out guns, and of course, two of you know, his detectives are on the train, Bill Paxton and who was Jerry Lambert and Maria Alonso, Detective Cantrell. You know, they got their guns out and like a whole shootout ensues, and Predator just drops in on the train and starts jacking everybody up. But, you know, this is where, you know, of course, as we talked last week about Bill Paxton, one of the few men to be killed by an alien, a Predator, and a Terminator.
Yeah. It's just not have a good look, man.
but this is a few times we've actually seen Predator rip someone's skull and spine out. Cause yeah, you know, when they get to the train, the crime scene, you know, his body's missing and Glover starts tracking a blood trail and, you know, catches him right as he's like popping the head off and going from there. But then also we have this sequence later on when he finally confronts Gary Busey's character, and he tells him this whole thing about, you don't know what you're dealing with. Let me tell you about it. These things, you know, took out a, you know, squad of commandos in South America, and when captured, it set off a bomb that would destroy the equivalent of, I think it said like 300, 900 or something like that, city blocks. And they've come up with a whole plan to catch him. So they're like, yeah, we're pretty sure he only sees in the infrared or the heat spectrum. So we're going to fight him in a, you know, with these cold suits on so he can't see us, and we're going to put up this tracking dust everywhere so it'll, he'll stand out in our night vision stuff. And but no, Predator just like, oh, let me switch the vision modes on my helmet and find something that I can see.
And I thought that was kind of cool, too, because before we had really only seen the whole, you know, thermal vision being utilized. Yep. But to, you know, see everything and like, oh, there's a lot of different spectrums. Like,
yeah.
But, I mean, if you're a hunter, typically you have multiple tools in your arsenal. So, you know, you try to plan for every scenario that can.
Yeah. And that segment, too, is like, because when Danny Glover figures out these guys are falling into their own trap, he goes to his trunk and starts suiting up, pulls that little pistol shotgun and all kind of other stuff, and goes in there freaking, you know, the grenade launcher and everything goes in there like ready for war, and, you know, actually injures the Predator and then gets him on the run for once. And you kind of increase like, yeah, dude's a badass. This guy's worthy of being hunted. And, you know, that's the first time you see the Predator become the prey. You know, yeah. At that point, he's no longer hunting Danny Glover. His ass is getting hunted, and he's just trying to get away.
Yes. And I thought that was, you know, really cool.
And, of course, you get a scene where he takes the mask off, and Danny tries to, you know, issue the same line that Arnold said, because you're one ugly, and the Predator goes, motherfucker, and throws him across the room. Yes. And he calls him a vagina face, too, which was another
yes
good line. Because he did kind of have a vagina face.
I'm going to leave that alone.
Go back and just watch his mouth when he talks. I mean, that's all I'm going to say. I mean, it was a fairly accurate description. Oh. But yeah, you know, when he pursues him out of the bathroom and down like an elevator shaft, he finds a Predator spaceship hidden in the sewers or whatnot underneath his building. And that is like the first time we've seen his trophy room, what he's doing with all these skulls and stuff he's taken. And it's cool because there's like not only human skulls, there's various other creatures and alien skulls on the wall. So this is not just, you know, this guy travels all over the galaxy hunting people, not just, you know, one one type of prey.
It's like, is there a, you know, a particular season for humans?
Yeah, it's like there's a permit. Because they only come here when it's really hot, apparently, from what they've said. So I guess it's like summer is human season.
But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's different hemispheres, so there's always a summer somewhere. But
I think if your vision is heat-based, what a better time to hunt people when everyone is going to be super hot and easy to see. Yeah, in the winter, it might be a little bit more difficult to track some humans.
But then Predator goes to Antarctica.
Like I said, we get the cool fight where he finally kills the Predator, and then all of these Predators show up. And
dude, I thought that was an oh shit moment. I was like, oh fuck, because, you know, before, or, you know, so long, I was like, all right, there's one, you know, one Predator. Like, no, like six emerge out of the freaking.
Yeah, because they have a rule. You know, this is his hunt. We're not going to interfere. And I do like Danny's reaction. You see the look on his face go, well, I'm fucked. But he drops the little disc thing, puts up, he's like, who's next? Yeah, and they're just like, nah, we're just here for the body. And, you know, throws him a pistol, kind of like, you know, here, you've taken out one of us. We're honoring you. Here's your trophy of this kill. And it's, like I said, an old flintlock pistol. So obviously these guys have been around for a while. And they do that same thing in the Batman versus Predator comic books. When Batman kills the Predator, you know, other Predators show up and they present him with this big-ass sword. Like, you know, it's like, all right, you are worthy. Here you go. Here's your trophy that you were able to take one of us out.
Yeah, I thought that was cool, too. And I forgot, you know, what the engraving on it was. And I was, you know, I kept trying to find the significance. And
it was somebody's name, but yeah. It almost like Napoleon or something. I don't know. It was some old shit. But then another famous sci-fi actor, Adam Baldwin, is Gary Busey's, you know, right-hand soldier or whatever. And he shows up like, you know, what happened? You know, you let him get away. And he's like, oh, don't worry, these guys are going to be back.
predator hunting season.
But so we did, you know, like I said, this one didn't do too well, so it was 20 years later before we got another sequel and eventually got the Predators movie, which directed by Robert Rodriguez, came out in 2010.
And I, when the movie first kicked off, I was like, all right, we've gone back to, you know, jungle warfare and that type of stuff. But no, you find out that, you know, this time around, people have just, you know, mysteriously been captured and, you know, woken up mid parachute flight to land on some mysterious island or, you know.
Speaking to catch a predator, this is probably the extraterrestrial version of showing up in my free candy van and just snatching people. They've gotten lazy too. They don't come to our environment now. They're like, fuck it. Let's just like bring people here so we can control the environment.
I still feel like, you know, because each of the characters, you know, had a little bit of a backstory. It's like, oh, I was in the middle of a firefight and I should be dead. Or, you know, it was, you know, really, you know, secretive, you know, either black ops, paramilitary, or hell, you even had the one guy that was, you know, just a, I guess he was top dog of a particular prison or something.
Yeah, you had prisoners, you had Colombian enforcers, you had black ops shoulder, you had, you know, Israeli Mossad snipers. And you even had a serial killer. I mean, it was like just a collection of random fuckery that they're like, it'd be fun to hunt. And you see that like they've been doing this apparently for years. So it's like, it's weird because like we're the other predators we've seen so far are almost like, you know, they want to hunt the prey in their natural environment. This right here is like the equivalent of, you know, the rich guys that go to a...
I always felt like it was
the
Hunger Games or something.
But, I mean, it's these are the one percenters of the Predator universe. They don't go out and hunt. They're like, let's go to a resort and hunt people on our land.
So it's kind of like the hostels of Predator.
Yeah, it's like baiting fishing a baited pond. You know, it's it's a little bit lazier, I think.
Maybe, but I mean, you know, this was kind of cool where they started introducing the different types of predators. So you learn that not all predators are equal. You've got, you know, some of the smaller predators that get hunted by the larger predators, but, you know, still, you know, regardless of which version you come across, they're both formidable opponents to any humans. But, I thought this was kind of cool where, you know, it's like the predators using, you know, the freaking attack dogs almost, like, you know, to separate. And, you know, it's like, oh, shit, they're, you know, legitimately tracking and trying to scare us and getting us to split up and, you know.
Yeah, like I said, it's almost like a professional setup hunt.
Yeah.
Other than, you know, instead of a wild hunt.
But, you know.
And this is the first time we've seen multiple predators engaging. Up until this one point, there's been, you know, one guy at a time. Where this one, there's like, you know, a group of them hunting the heroes and kind of added a different. And
also
a big name cast in this movie. I mean, freaking Danny Trejo. Who else is in that one? There's like I said, there's a bunch of big A-list actors in this one.
Danny Trejo was the one that really jumped out at me originally because I was like,
Lawrence Fishburne's, you know, in it.
Adrian Brody.
That 70s show guy. I mean, it was...
Lawrence Fishburne, Alice Braga, Topher Grace.
Yeah, but like I said, and of course, what's his name from Justified's in it. Like I said, it was a big, big movie, you know, with a lot bigger budget than the previous films. I mean, but then again, inflation, shit made in the 80s, cheaper than the shit made in 2010. It's like, if you don't spend $100 million, you're not making a real movie, apparently, at this point in life.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I thought this brought some rather interesting concepts. And
also, this is the one movie that really didn't have any kind of happy ending, where, like I said, Arnold survived, Danny Glover survived, you know, Adrian Brody survived, but he's still trapped on this fucking planet, and oh, there's more people parachuting down at the end, so yeah, the next wave of hunters will probably be here soon. It's like, you know, even though you survived, you're going to end up like the guy that they find that's like in an old crash ship that's been surviving just by basically becoming a predator himself and stealing supplies from the new prey that comes in.
But I mean, I thought that was kind of cool, you know. And then when they run across the first dead body, you know, basically like they're running through, and all of a sudden, like, everybody's getting hit with all kinds of booby traps and stuff like that, and they think that, you know, oh shit, it's the predators, but they come across this corpse, and they realize that, no, this wasn't designed to, you know, trap us or anything. This was designed for them, and the freaking, like, deadfall log, you know, and they're talking about, you know, oh, well, you know, that log would have been, you know, more than enough to take out anything. And it's like, I don't think you realize how big these creatures are that, you know, this was designed to take out, because with a deadfall, you want it to be 5 times the weight of whatever your intended target is.
Yeah.
So, I thought it was really cool, you know, from that standpoint, you know, and, you know, people having to rely really on, you know, survival training, you know, ultimately. Yeah.
And like I said, we hadn't really rewatched the Alien vs. Predator spinoff movies. But the first one was all right, where it was, you know, apparently this temple that was filled with aliens was kind of like a predator rite of passage. This was, you know, where the young hunters came to prove that they were hunters and earn their... Because, you know, they kind of got dropped in with just their spears and whatnot. And, you know, they had to kind of earn their plasma rifle. Because they find the plasma rifle in the temple and something like that. It's like, all right, if you can come here and survive fighting an alien, then you're one of the clan and can go off and hunt people. So it was kind of cool seeing.
So I wonder if there's like a whole, like, you know, predator, you know, civilization, you know. And, you know, much like what I almost think of... You know, like Indian rite of passage, how, yeah, like, you know, in order to become a warrior, you had to, you know, go through certain feats and stuff like that. So, you know, I wonder if you, like, okay, you're a hunter, you're a gatherer, you're, you know, a defender, you, yeah, are there to, you know, make additional predators. Like,
yeah, because this is like the first movie that really gave the predator a culture. You know, we know they're hunters, but we don't know a whole lot about them. But then you show them, like, oh, here's like a rite of passage or whatever. And you never really see female predators. You know, it's always, so it's, yeah, it does kind of mirror an old, you know, Native American or, you know.
You know, or maybe it's,
or,
maybe
you
it's
know, South
like,
American, you know,
maybe
tribe.
It's like the Boy Scouts, you know, where like you got to earn your different badges.
Yeah. Oh, you got your alien badge. All right, cool. Now you can go, you know, hunt something else.
That's just awesome. It's like, congratulations, you've made fire, you now get a helmet.
And I do like how there was that whole like alien production facility there, where it was like had a captured queen and a whole little alien factory to create things for them to hunt.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Well, as we kind of wrap this up, any final thoughts here on the Intenso?
I mean, it's maintained a very good cigar. You know, it's, I can't find anything bad about it. You know, I was told that I would enjoy this cigar, and I heard 3 or 4 other people while I was purchasing this cigar all say that it was really good. I have to agree. You know,
yeah, I mean, very well. I've had a little issue of staying lit tonight, but it may be a little bit over humidified because these are brand new. They've only been on the shelf for like a couple days. So it may, you know, pick one up, let it sit in your humidor for a couple days and just, you know, let it, you know,
maybe even outside your humidor for a day. Yeah. But I mean, you know, as far as the construction goes, Spot on. The flavor.
The first one of these, because I tried one this weekend to see how I like before we, and no problems with the first one I smoked. So, yeah. Like I said, this may be a one-off issue, but otherwise the construction is very, you know,
and the flavor has been consistent throughout. Yes. And that's one of the things that I've liked. It's got a complex flavor, so it's, even though it's been consistent, you know, with each draw, I get, you know, that touch of spice. I get the, you know, flavor and the aroma of the cigar and everything. And, you know, I go for my second puff and it's all over again. Like,
yeah.
I'm really digging it.
And if you're going to name something Intenso, it's going to have some strength with it too. And it's not disappointed on its strength factor, but it's not overpowering of the flavors. It's a good balance of strength and, you know, full bodied flavor.
Absolutely. I can see myself going to this cigar again many, many times.
So do you have a favorite Predator moment?
I mean, there's a few out there. I mean, you know, the ones that really stand out in my head are the train. Now, the younger version of me would have said, you know, when all the Colombians and everybody busted into the room of, you know, the one guy, they're having sex on the bed, and I'm like, sweet, boobs and Predator. You know, that was always a highlight.
It was the 80s, this was early 90s. Yeah, but action movies had to have boobs back in the day.
Yeah, and, that was a requirement. So this was one of those movies where I could see boobs, so that was always a big draw. But, you know, just the whole, you know, skin bodies and stuff like that. That was always
interesting. The first time I saw that movie, that scene really, like, you know, kind of scared me. I was like, that's disgusting. But also, these movies have generated so many great one-liners that people still quote today.
Like, and, I mean, one of the things that we didn't even talk about was, you know, Bill Paxton and his come-ons, like, from the start, like... And
yeah, he was the Hawkins of this movie with the bad jokes.
Yes.
But, and there's the one quote, too, that I really enjoyed that, like I said, I've heard the line quoted before, is at one point where, at this point, they don't know it's an alien, they think it's some kind of assassin, and Danny Glover goes to meet with the head of the Jamaican voodoo posse, King Louis, whatever his name is. But he's
King,
like,
Willie.
King Willie. And he's all, like, super voodooed out, and he's, like, doing the chicken bones thing. He's, like, the same every time. He's, like, this thing is not, you know, comes from the other land. It's from the land of the dead. You know, he fully believes in some kind of demon. He has a thing, he's, like, you can't kill, you know, like, you can't stop what can't be stopped. There's no stopping what can't be stopped. There's no killing what can't be killed. You must prepare yourself. And that's, well, that was probably one of my favorite lines from the second movie.
Yeah, and I mean, the you know, once the voodoo gang, like, bust in, and, you know, they got the one guy, you know, suspended upside down, and they're covering him in blood, and they're like, come on, let me go, you know, I'm scared. And it's like, well, I could just scare you, but no, nah, that's too easy. And it's like, what are you doing to me? Fucking voodoo magic, man.
Yeah. Not only do I have to kill you, I have to take your soul. He's like, but you know what I think? Shit happens. And then, yeah, shit happens because they all end up getting predatored. So with that, we'll wrap this up and be right back.
Stay tuned.
We're going on a hunt to kill gorilla shysters.
On a ritual to skin some special forces fighters.
Rolling in hard because we're armed to the teeth.
Can't see me, I'm invisible, dancing to the beat.
Knock, knock, get down. Listen to the sound of the chopper going boom, make you drop to the ground.
Those guys are really brave. Think I'll go out and play. Collect all those skills and prove that I can slay.
There's a hole in Jesse Ventura's chest. Don't know is it a beast or just cardiac arrest. Mark is blasting, it's a minigun fest. Let's follow his lead and destroy the forest.
How motherfuckers y'all shot me? You should let me know you wanna party. I'll blow Max head, put Dylan to bed. Then I'll polish Billy's skull till it's no longer red. I'm a predator, predator.
Came from space.
Predator, predator.
An alien race.
Predator, predator.
The hunter is the hunted.
Predator, predator.
We have to keep moving cause this alien to stalk on their poncho is dead. So get to the chopper! Covered with mud, a sexy new disguise to hide my body heat from his infrared eyes. Built a booby trap out of sticks and plants.
I came here to battle, so get ready to dance now.
Hey, man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back. It's time for Beer 30.
Yeah, and this week, so we talked about Predator. So, you know, with Predator comes Megadeth. Lots and lots of death. So, you know, from our good friends at Dawson Fine Wine and Spirits had, you know, hooked us up with Unibrow's Atout Le Monde. It's the Megadeth beer, named more exclusively after the song Atout Le Monde. So, you know, I've seen, you know, the Iron Maiden, the Trooper beer and stuff like that. So it's kind of cool, you know, being a metalhead and seeing different bands partner with different breweries and that type of thing and coming out with, you know, some pretty sweet beer.
Yeah, apparently Dave Mustaine, you know, came across the Unibrow's head brewer and, you know, share a passion for heavy metal and craft beer and decided to come out with a Megadeth-inspired beer.
So this is actually going to be a, it's a Belgian-style dry-hopped Saison. And I gotta say, I'm really digging it. You know, it pours light. It's got a nice frothy head like you would anticipate. You know, but it's hoppy, but it's not over the top. In fact, a lot more citrus and, you know, more fruit notes are what I taste with this beer. But it,
And normally I prefer stouts and darker ale, but when I am drinking a lighter beer, I do, you know, enjoy the Belgian styles. And like I said, this is a good example of a Belgian style beer. You know, it's that light fruitiness, and also it's, you know, low in alcohol. It's 4.5%, so you can, you know, pound a few of these. And, you know, suggested serving temperatures are a bit colder than you would normally serve your stouts and whatnot. So it's a good, you know, warm weather beer to have as we're getting into spring and summer months.
Yeah, and I, you know, I need to invest and get some tulip glassware because I'm going to save, you know, a couple of the bottles that we have left because that's really what they recommend. I didn't have one, but, you know, drinking stuff out of a tulip, like, it really makes the aroma and everything really bring it to your nose. And, you know, like, as you, I mean, you can just smell the floral and the fruity and the citrusy notes on this beer. And, you know, I'm just thinking that's going to be a, you know, bring this beer even into a better light than what we're having right now. And right now is damn good.
Yeah, and I do like the fact that with Unibrow's packaging, you get a lot of information about the beer if you are a beer nerd like us. You don't get with, you know, most manufacturers. But yeah, on the box, I mean, it has, you know, serving temperature, glassware suggestions, and even food pairing suggestions. So, I mean, there's a lot of cool information available, you know, right out of the package.
And I think, you know, and some of the recommended pairings are red Thai, fried calamari, both of which...
Chicken shawarma.
I really enjoy both fried calamari and... I'm sorry, it was pad Thai, not red Thai. I'm an idiot, but, you know, I just recently started getting more and more into Thai foods and that type of stuff. So, you know, may need to try to do... get the proper glassware and try like a Thai dinner one night. And
yeah, I mean, yeah, like I said, the Belgian beers just pair so nicely with food, especially like, you know, fried stuff or even a little bit of some spicy stuff.
And one of the cool things too, you know, about this beer is, you know, you really want to drink this beer, you know, as young as possible. A lot of beers, you know, since we've gotten into home brewing and everything else, like, you know, really start coming into their own after they've aged for a year or so. But, you know, it's nice to have something that is ready to drink, you know, at its prime immediately.
And, you know, pair it with some Megadeth and, you know, jam out and drink your beer.
Which I really love this song anyway. So, you know, it just worked, you know. It's like, wow. It's metal, it's a song I like, it's a band I like, it's, you know, ties into the whole Predator thing.
I do like, to all
the world, Predators are bad.
And I do like, you know, metal music, you know, getting into craft brewing. You know, it's not like, you know, you go to a concert, so most of the time you're limited to drinking Bud Light or, you know, some macro brew that, you know, is just not good. But with this, you know, hey, some classier beers to go with my metal.
And I got to say, the artwork that comes along with it, too, is pretty sweet. I don't know if you can see the image I'm looking at on the front of the box here. But
yes, it features Megadeth's mascot, Vic Battlehead, on the on the label, too. So there's no doubt that you're getting a Megadeth beer when you pick one of these up.
So, absolutely. You know, for me, I'm at a 4.75.
Yeah, I think I'll go with that, too. You know, any bands out there listening, get into beer making. It's fun. It's kind of cool to have your, you know, band themed beers for people to sample while they're, you know, I know a lot of, you know, music guys, you're getting into spirits and whatnot. But hey, yeah, I think some more guys get into the beer game.
Absolutely. And with that,
speaking of which, have you heard they're coming out with a Ledslinger's beer as well?
Yes, I did see that.
Haven't heard anything about it, but it's apparently going to be a thing.
Yep.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
We are the Metal Geeks Podcast, and on this show, we have heavy metal, comic books, video games, movies, theme parks, and more.
Wait, comics?
Yep.
And movies?
Exactly.
Video games?
Yeah.
Metal?
Of course.
How does theme parks fit in this?
It just does. All of us Metal Geeks can be found at MetalGeeks.net.
At Metal Geeks for Twitter.
Metal Geeks on Instagram.
And Metal Geeks on the Facey Space. You can also find us on iTunes. Subscribe today.
Metal Geeks.
Yes, science!
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time for science. Time to expand your brain there and learn some stuff.
I don't know how much more it can expand.
Might have to get a bigger head.
Maybe.
You might have to, like, you know, delete some useless files or something, kind of like backing up your computer. Just delete some of that porn you got stored there.
You know, just go on a mass archive and probably do a defrag, a redundancy check.
You're a defrag redundancy check. Well, first off, you know, we've talked about SpaceX and their whole trying to land a rocket after it's been used. Because up until this point, you know, when you see those shuttles go up into space, the booster rockets, which cost hundreds of millions of dollars a piece, just get used once. They're just basically disposable. But part of SpaceX trying to privatize spaceflight and make it more affordable is they're wanting to, you know, recover these rockets and have them land safely and then being able to recycle them and reuse them. So they've recently launched the first recycled rocket. They've kind of perfected the recovery portion of it. They've successfully launched and landed a Falcon 9 8 times. But this is the first time they've tested, you know, a rebuilt rocket, a reused rocket, to see if it, you know, will hold up and not just explode on the launch bay.
I'm sure there's a series of, you know, safety checks in addition to all the other safety checks and everything. But I mean, I guess that's one of the reasons why, you know, people talk about government waste and everything else is, you know, when you're making that kind of investment, why not make it something potentially reusable, you know, or at least, like, salvage some of it, maybe? I mean, I guess when the taxpayers are footing your dime versus when you're footing your own dime.
Yeah, the this rocket originally flown April of last year and was launched again last Thursday to put a telecommunications satellite in orbit. You know, now that they've kind of, and it, you know, it was landed and recovered as it did before. So, you know, they're showing that this type of reuse is actually, you know, possible. And then, you know, the next step in these tests is to, you know, increase. You know, like I said, it's been a year since this thing flew. The next thing I want to do is be able to, you know, launch a rocket twice in the span of one day. That's what, you know, they're trying to, you know, right now it's like, we launched it, we recovered it, we tested it for a year, and we launched it again.
Yeah, I mean, I would be kind of curious to see what the stress test results reveal, and, you know, if it's a viable option. I don't know. I mean, you know, there's a lot of forces that come into play and that type of thing, even more so than just the cost. So, you know, who knows? You know, this may, you know, end up being like, hey, we found a flaw in this design, and we end up, you know, inventing, you know, some type of new material that's, you know, even more durable or more lightweight or something. I mean, you know, these are the types of things that are going to continually allow folks to push the needle instead of just settling for the same old, same old.
Yeah, I mean, and if we get to the point where these things can be, you know, reused multiple times in a day, that's going to make, you know, recreational space flight that much easier. You know, if it's not something where, like, we launch something and it takes us, you know, 6 months to a year to launch something else. If it's, you know, gets to the point where rockets are taking off as frequently as airplanes do, you know, it's, that's really going to expand the, you know, use of space exploration and make it more a common place.
Well,
item.
I mean, I saw a thing, some sort of article, and I don't remember all the details now, but, you know, basically it was like interconnected hamster tubes that could take you basically from, you know, let's say Los Angeles to Houston in like 45 minutes. Like, you know, they could, you know, propel you like 740 miles per hour, like, you know, in this freaking little tube. So I don't know, you know, with that type of technology and everything else, who knows, you know? I mean,
well, yeah. In case the whole, like, you know, going to space thing doesn't work out, and we have to prepare for the eventual destruction of the Earth, have you heard of the Doomsday Vault?
Yes. This is basically where they store, hey, here's, you know, the best of what humanity had to offer.
No, not at all. The original Doomsday Vault in Svalbard, was it Norway? Basically, it's a giant seed storage device. That way, if, you know, something happens and the world's vegetation's wiped out, we have the means to regrow plants, food, you know, to go on. It's a giant seed vault that, like, all countries have kind of agreed to donate to, you know, help preserve, just in case of a worst case scenario where, you know, food is wiped out, we have the ability to start farming again.
And we think we can start farming, like, you know, so let's, you know,
I'm sure someone has thought of what, but yeah, they want to be able to preserve, you know,
like, that's always kind of been like my thing. Like, people are like, yeah, you know, this major disaster, but what happens if this disaster spans over hundreds of thousands of years?
Like, well, I think we're all fucked at that point.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But in a situation where, you know, people may be living
localized
in a bunker or whatnot for a few years, you know, once the, you know, stored food runs out and hopefully the environment goes back to normal, we have the ability to start over. I mean, this thing's located 500 feet below ground, so it, you know, would survive nuclear blast or whatnot. But now that the food situation is taken care of, they've started to think about preserving culture. So now they're starting a second vault called the Arctic World Archive, where basically they're going to allow countries to back up offline data and preserve it for, you know, thousands and thousands of years. So
I thought that something like that had already been started, where basically it was a vault where, like, you know, just random shit, you know, from, you know, like Edison, all the way up to, like, you know, modern times. Like, oh, this is world renowned. This is something that is.
I'm sure the Smithsonian or some, you know, each country probably has their own little thing, but this is going to be a, you know, truly international effort. And the main thing is they're talking about taking.
And this is
de-digitizing
a floppy disk.
pretty much, you know, all data stored on hard drives, where most things are now, is corruptible, and
I mean, it's rust particles, so
yeah.
Any
so they're talking about going old school with it and de-digitizing data, basically printing hard copies on film and storing it indefinitely in this, you know, vault, so we can, you know, maintain books or just, you know, back up, you know, the entire, you know, your government archives and whatnot.
You know what's going to happen, though, is some civilization or, you know, humans many hundreds of years from now are going to come across this ancient technology and be like, how the fuck are we supposed to use this? This hasn't been used. And, like, it'd be like somebody handing you a floppy disk today and you being like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this? Like,
well, in this case, like I said, with everything stored on film, you're not going to really need anything to view it. I mean, it's basically like, you know, old school projector technology, which is fairly simple. You hold it up to the light and go, hey, there's something on this. Let's figure this out. But it's kind of weird that, you know, instead of going high tech, they're going in the reverse just in case technology ever fails. Well, I mean, that's just
like, you know, like the nuclear codes and all of that stored, you know, offline on, you know, basically nothing that, you know, is interconnected to another device just to minimize the probability of getting hacked and that type of thing. So, I mean, you know, in a sense, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, the more connected you are to something, the more, you know, you run the risk of there being some sort of a security or data breach.
Yeah, and especially in the time of, you know, cybersecurity and all that, you know, having something that's
Russia.
A backup to all of your government's data just in case someone ever destroys it all. Yeah, when the internet goes down, you know, we'd be able to take a long time to re-upload that shit, but yeah, at least there's original copies somewhere. So there's no way I can get out of my student loans by wiping out the internet. Fuck. Anyway, speaking of Skynet, Elon Musk, our favorite German Bond villain, possibly, has started a new company called Neuralink. And basically the purpose of this company is to create the first cyborg. They're wanting to ease the interaction between human and technology. You know, speaking of Ghost in the Shell and coming up, you know, that's basically the future Elon Musk is envisioning, is where, you know, humanity and robotics are one.
I mean, that's always a good ploy, but, you know, when you start talking AI, like, humans are pretty power hungry themselves. Eventually that AI is going to get tired of getting shat on and being less inferior, and we're going to have Terminators.
Well, this right here is...
We're going to have Rise of the Cyborgs. Like, you're going to have, like, the non-modified humans versus, you know, the modified.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's, you know, not so much AI, but more of, you know, humans directly interfacing with technology. Specifically, like, some of the, you know, less far future ideas and stuff like treating, you know, brain injuries with, you know, neural implants, you know, stuff that can treat, you know, neurological disorders like depression or epilepsy with some kind of brain machine interface, or, you know, people who are disabled being able to control things with their mind.
Say umbrella?
Possibly, yes.
Instead of the T virus, we're going to have the E virus.
But like I said, with a, you know, smarter brain machine interface, you know, your robotic, you know, say you have like a catastrophic injury where you lose an arm, a leg, or whatever, and they replace it with some kind of prosthetic. Being able to control it by naturally, like the same way you control your regular arm, where you know, it's just, you know, natural brain impulses instead of having to think out the commands and stuff. You just think like, hey, I'm going to grab this and I grab it. You know, it makes it a lot more normal for the people that have those, where they're functioning, you know, at their pre-injury conditions. Yeah, if they smooth up that whole interface between, you know, the brain and the prosthetics.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can see that being very beneficial, but I can see that also being like, you know, shit, what was that movie? Idle Hands, and it's like the possessed hand and stuff like that, where it has a mind on its own. Like, you know, what happens when you, you know, lose the ability and the hand starts thinking for itself? And I'm not saying nemesis, but could be nemesis.
You're fearing weird masturbation injuries, aren't you?
No.
Really?
I don't have an axe or a hatchet, okay?
Oh. Well,
but I do have a sweet machete.
Shit. Well, you know, in the category of weird space shit, the Cloud Architect development has released plans for what they're calling the Anomalata, how you pronounce it, Tower, which will be a the world's largest skyscraper, because it will be suspended from space.
You know, I've seen stuff about this, and I don't know. Like, I guess if it ever comes to fruition, but with a constant rotation and everything else, like...
With this design they're talking about, basically capturing an asteroid and setting it up in near-Earth orbit, and then hanging this giant, which they're saying will basically be like a full floating city, it'll be so large, from an asteroid in space, and setting up a orbital pattern where it will begin and end in the same place every day. So like I said, you get it on it in New York, and it, while it goes through its patterns, at the end of the day, it winds up back in New York. So, I mean, but yeah, how does that, you know, going to deal with weather and whatnot?
Well, I mean, and then too, it's, all right, we got to capture an asteroid. Like, we haven't even figured out how the fuck, like, if an asteroid were to, you know, get within a, you know, orbit where it could potentially be Earth-threatening, like, how we're going to deflect or manage something, like, well, much less, like, hey, let's just capture this thing and bring it a little bit closer to us and build this giant-ass city thing and not think that the weight and everything else is going to also impact the orbit.
Yeah, because, you know, they're...
like, this just seems, like, so far-fetched that I'm like, not in my lifetime.
Well, they're, you know... They're saying that, you know, this is kind of a concept thing, but, you know, NASA has a, you know, planned mission for 2021 to try to capture and redirect an asteroid, you know, kind of as a experiment in both space mining and possible Earth defense scenarios. So they think that, you know, eventually, you know, capturing an asteroid is going to be no big deal. Then all we have to do is freaking hang a building from it, so and we're good to go.
Have you secretly been playing Mass Effect Andromeda?
No.
Because, you know, you're talking about cyborgs, you're talking about, you know, cities in space. I think you might have been watching me play too many video games.
I mean, they had floating cities in Star Wars. It'd be pretty cool.
Not to mention, like, crap, I gotta buy, you know, some kind of crazy expensive ticket to get up to the city, and then how the fuck do I get down? Parachute?
Yes. And with that, we'll be right back.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News.
Yeah, news.
So this week we're going to focus on a lot of the up-and-coming movies that are going to be happening. You know, we're gearing up for the summer blockbuster season, and,
yeah, so it's a trailer-heavy time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's a lot of the movies, we haven't even got to the final trailers yet. So, you know, we're on, like, the second, you know, official trailer. But, you know, the first one I want to talk about is a franchise that I've always enjoyed. Some movies have been hit or miss, but, you know, The Mummies, so it looks like June 9th is when it'll be released, but, you know, we've got our second trailer, and I gotta say, it looks absolutely stunning and badass. I mean, it is like almost a godly, like...
Yeah. I mean, and we, you know... Not a dude mummy this time. We get a girl mummy.
Yeah.
And I, like I said, I don't know if this is... They're going to reference the older movies. This is the same universe. But I believe, because, you know, they name the mummy in this movie. It's... I can't remember the name now. But I believe it was the female mummy that the mummy in the original movies was trying to resurrect. His evil girlfriend. So... And I do believe when it shows them in Egypt, you know, it looked like the guy who played the original mummy standing there with her. So
And they're saying that it's going to be, you know, sort of a reboot, and it's intended to be, you know, kind of the first installment, you know, of, you know, the Universal, you know, Monster Universe. Her name is Amanet, maybe? A-H-M-A-N-E-T.
Amenetep or something. Yeah. Like I said, it sounds familiar from the first movies or whatever. But they were set in, like, you know, whatever, the 40s. So even if, you know, it is, you know, related to the original movies, you know, all the characters from then are probably definitely dead by now. So it is a whole new storyline. And it's kind of cool that they're talking about bringing back, you know, the Universal Monsters and making it kind of interconnected, which is the new hotness now because everyone wants to do interconnected universes.
Well, I mean, and I think with the interconnected universes, like, you really open the door for longevity. Like, the, you know, without that, it's, okay, here's a one-off movie, and then for somebody to try to tie something into that or whatever oftentimes becomes really, really difficult. But this, I feel like, gives you much more of an arc and, you know, freedom. Yeah. And then, two, I think it also helps in, you know, continuity in a sense. So that way, you know, something isn't completely deviated. Like, you know, I kind of think to the Halloween franchise, right? So you have the first two Halloween movies centered around Michael Myers. You get the third one, which is
nothing to do with it.
You know, and it's like, WTF.
Yeah, Season of the Witch. And hey, as long as we're getting new Universal Monster movies, can we get a new Monster Squad movie? Could you imagine an updated, more gritty, realistic Monster Squad?
The kids from Stranger Things, will let them get a couple more years. Shit.
I didn't even think about fuck yeah.
When Stranger Things get a little bit stranger, now we truly got Monster Squad.
Exactly. Oh my God. I mean, yeah, that first movie was kind of a Goonies with monsters.
So, exactly.
And Stranger Things is pretty much Goonies with monsters. So yeah, that... Yeah, those kids at their teenage years, we can bring them into the Monster Squad franchise.
Absolutely. You know, while we're at it, you know, another movie that we talked about not too long ago, but Stephen King's It. And I got to say, this updated version looks creepy as shit.
Like, the first movie was creepy as shit, but it was, if anyone remembers it when it first came out, was a made-for-TV movie. So there was limitations on how far they could go because, you know, with TV censorship and whatnot. This looks legit fucking scary. I mean, the new Pennywise is something like, you know, Tim Curry was creepy as shit, but in today's age, he's just kind of like a, you know, weird, whatever, Bozo the Clown with nasty teeth. But this guy is fucking scary looking.
And, you know, one of the things that, you know, one, I wanted to talk about it, but two, just with the trailer release in the first 24 hours, you know, this has now set a new record where it was viewed globally 197 million times.
And from the trailer, too, I don't know if they're, like, in the original version, it was a two-parter, where the first one was them dealing with it as kids and injuring it and then coming back as adults and having to finish it off. But from the trailer, it really only shows the young guys dealing with it. So I don't know if, you know, they're going to do what was originally portrayed in the book and in the first movie, or if this is like a setup for a two-parter where, you know, the first movie is going to be them as kids. And when they eventually do a sequel, because everything gets a freaking sequel these days, it's the adult part of that story.
Yeah, and you know, I would not be opposed to that. I mean, you know, looking at this trailer and everything else, you know, when, you know, toward the end, and they're basically going through the slides, and, you know, all of a sudden, like, you know, the images just start, you know, cycling themselves, and, you know, Pennywise starts, you know, appearing and everything.
And it shows the scene where there's like a red balloon floating through the library.
Yes.
Like, I'm wondering if they're doing the, because I think it was during the adult half of the movie where one of the characters are in the library and there's these balloons and they just start busting and throwing blood everywhere, but no one else sees it and no one else is reacting. That was one of the probably creepiest scenes of that first movie.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, it looks creepy. It looks like it's going to be awesome.
We all float down here too. Is like extra. We're like the, you know, his dead brother. Like, come on, you can stay here. We can all float. We can all float. We can all float. And fucking,
yes.
He's like,
then it's Pennywise just, you know, freaking charging. Yeah.
Like, nope. That's a whole lot of nope right there.
Well, another movie that, you know, you might say is a whole lot of nope is we are going to get Annabelle, you know, Creation. And, you know, this is basically going into the Conjuring universe. And
yeah, it's the origin story of the creepy doll from the Conjuring movies, which wasn't there already an Annabelle
movie? Yes.
Yeah, so this is like the origin of, which based on a real-life haunted doll. I mean, there's a... I forgot where it's at, but there is, like, a museum or something where this thing is encased, and there's tons of stories of this creepy haunted doll that, you know, kind of inspired these movies. Yeah, seeing its origin story, and, like, we all know my feeling on creepy-ass dolls, and this is just going to be... make it a lot worse.
Well, I mean, I was a huge fan, so, I mean, I am really, you know, anticipating good things. I mean... the score alone in this, as well as the jump scares and everything, like, this is going to be one of those that'll make for an excellent date night.
Oh, that one scene where there's the doll and, like, a girl at a little tea party, and the girl's, like, arms and stuff start snapping and popping, and, oh, yeah, that's just shin shivers up your spine.
Yes.
But in this day and age of crossover movies, how long before we get the Child's Play versus Annabelle fight scene?
I don't know, man.
Chucky versus, like, Annabelle.
I mean, unfortunately, like, I was a big fan of Chucky, but, you know, I mean, I feel like that, you know, Child's Play may be a dying breed. Like, you know, that's one franchise that you don't really hear people trying to further or do anything additional with, unless, you know, there's been, like, some straight to, you know, DVD releases or something.
I think Seed of Chucky is the last thing I saw. But I've heard rumors that they're either rebooting or doing another one at some point. So in this day and age, we're out of ideas and we reboot or remake everything. So it's probably not too far off.
No. I don't know. I mean, Chucky always kind of had one of those special places, though, you know, as a horror movie buff. I would like to see what a modern adaptation would look like. But I think it would take a true fan of the franchise, because I could see it, you know, going overly CGI and everything. And then, you know, the other thing, too, is just Chucky's jokes.
yeah.
It's almost like Freddy had a...
that's a remake that should never have been made.
Yes. On to, you know... a little bit more nerdy and away from the dark, sinister horror aspect is we got our second trailer for Spider-Man Homecoming, which, you know, does the awesome, you know, of the Marriott, you know, freaking scene. So, you know, for folks that have been to Dragon Con, familiar with the Marriott. Oh, and
Marriott. I thought you said Mariachi for some reason.
No, that was last night after our shenanigans.
Of course, you know, filmed in Atlanta, as a lot of movies, especially the Marvel movies, are doing today. Yeah, you get that epic shot of the Marriott lobby and the Vulture. But yeah, this one, you know, has a lot more Iron Man in the trailer. You know, apparently,
yeah,
you know,
mean,
there's gonna be a lot of Tony Stark in this. And
I mean, it's truly, you know, Tony trying to give his you know, best fatherly advice, I guess, on how, you know, Spidey can, you know, truly become an Avenger, and, you know, how he's supposed to carry himself. And coming from Tony Stark, like, I'm like, that's a little bit of a uniqueness, because, you know, Tony's typically, I'm the playboy, I'm the careless one, yet, you know, here it is, I'm trying to give you fatherly advice. Do as I say, not as I do.
And the only complaints I've heard so far, some people, because Marvel has done a good job with their trailers not giving away the story of the movie. And some people are like, oh, it kind of spoilers because it shows a scene where he's like, you know, Tony takes the suit back because, you know, he's trying to get Spider-Man to be a little bit more careful and whatnot. And Spider-Man's, what, you know, kind of
Well,
wanting to be an Avenger and kind of taking unnecessary risks, or at least that's the way Tony sees it. So he has to go back to using his, you know, original suit. And Tony's like, because he says, you know, in the trailer, I'm nothing without the suit. And he says, if that's true, you don't deserve the suit anyway. You know, basically, like, you know, you've got to be a hero on your own. And, you know, I can enhance your tech, but, you know, you shouldn't depend on the tech.
Yep.
Which is kind of funny coming from Tony Stark. But
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's truly a do as I say, not as I do, you know, type thing.
Because him being the, this is not a veteran superhero like the rest of it, you know. This is really a coming of age for Spider-Man. You know, he's got to show that he can be a hero on his own without, you know, being propped up by Tony and the rest, you know, earn his place on the team.
But, you know, I got to say, like, this really, you know, feels like Spider-Man. You know, there's been, you know, some of the previous Spider-Man movies that lost some of the feeling and everything else. But, you know, this really feels like it. You know, I mean, I almost feel like that this is going back to, you know, some of the animated Spider-Man.
Yeah, like I said, it really reminds me of the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon series where, you know, we got high school
Peter
Parker.
He's a little bit reckless. He's a little bit careless. You know, he's still very much coming of age. So I think that alone, you know, being portrayed is going to be a really cool dynamic for this movie.
And, like, the wise-assness, too. I like it when he gets a... somebody finds out he's Spider-Man, so he finally gets somebody he can kind of confide in, and he's like, they're watching a video of Captain America, and he's like, dude, do you know him too? And he's like, I stole his shield.
Or that, and it's like, hey, can I try on this suit? And, you know, the kid's kind of heavier and, you know, heavy set, and, you know, so it's kind of funny, like, seeing the overweight Spider-Man.
Which, that's also a Dragon Con staple as well. Hence why I don't dress up as superheroes. Spandex is not forgiving when you're a man of larger size.
Well, speaking of, you know, men of larger sizes and, you know, just iconicness, you know, one of the things that I've been following is King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. And, you know, I've always enjoyed movies like that, you know, the whole Sword in the Stone, you know, story. And, you know, this final trailer that we got looks really, really awesome.
Yeah, like, I'd not heard anything of this movie, but I went to see Ghost of the Shell earlier today, and there was the trailer for it in front of that. That's the first I'd seen of it, but, you know, Sons of Anarchy, Medieval Times, pretty much, because we got Charlie Hunnam as King Arthur, which, yeah, I'm glad to see him doing more movies. You know, I like him as an actor. I liked Pacific Rim, so it's cool to see him doing other genres of film.
Yeah, and this, you know, it's really cool because, you know, there's a certain, you know, mythological aspect too, you know. So I'm almost like, in my head, I'm like, it's going to be an action-packed Lord of the Rings. Yes. You know, so we're going to see...
No fucking hobbits. Keep your hairy foot fetishes to yourself.
There's only one precious, and it's a sword. Just don't be corrupted by its powers. So I don't know. I mean, I'm going to, you know, go and check this out. I'm anticipating big things. So as you were saying, you had an opportunity to see Ghost in the Shell. You know, it's, you know, opening weekend, you know, it finished third. So it didn't quite debut as, you know, high as, you know, some of the folks were anticipating. What are your, you know, takeaways? Is it...
Well, there's still a lot of, like freaking Beauty and the Beast is still big in the theater. I mean, that's... Yep. And that's been out a couple weeks. So there's still a few big movies out that are kind of, I guess, competing with it. But I liked it. It may be one of those properties that if you're not an old anime fan, you don't know what it is. But as far as an anime fan... Now that, you know, hell, Disney's been doing live action adaptation of their cartoons. It's kind of cool seeing the Japanese market doing similar, because Netflix has a Death Note series, live action series coming out, and it visually it looks amazing. I mean, there's a few tweaks to the story that's a little different. I want to go back and rewatch the original anime just so I can compare it. But I mean, there's sequences in the movie that is straight out of the original anime. It's like, you know, like shot for shot nearly, and it looks amazing. I mean, the futuristic Tokyo, like I said, it's worth seeing.
Cool, cool. Yeah, because, you know, so Beauty and the Beast, you know, spiked at number two, and it looks like DreamWorks, the Boss Baby, you know, took the top spot, which I think maybe I saw trailers for it, but that wasn't one that really jumped out at me as, like, I figured it'd be Beauty and the Beast just from the family aspect. And
this is, like, spring break weekend for a lot of places. You're getting a lot more kids out seeing movies and whatnot, so I can understand where the family films kind of took the box office this weekend. But I think this one's going to go, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
it should catch up.
And I mean, it hasn't been released in Japan or China yet. So, you know, with that happening, I believe it's next weekend. You know, that may really just, you know, on a global scale, you know, change things.
Yeah, Scarlett Johansson looks just like the Major. And even my favorite character was always the character of Batu. And yeah, the guy playing Batu looks like your Batu. It's badass.
Awesome, awesome. Any other thoughts, feedback on any nerdy shit that I may have not covered or left out or forgot about?
Oh, well, I did see a little bit of Kevin Smith. I'm hoping it's not an April Fool's joke because this was posted today and not on April Fool's. But apparently Kevin Smith, known for his line of, you know, wearing hockey jerseys, is now starting a hockey jersey company, and you're going to be able to buy some of these Kevin Smith edition jerseys for your nerd collection. I'm definitely going to be in the market for those. And also, speaking of Sons of Anarchy, the Sons of Anarchy spinoff, The Mayans, has started its casting process. And, you know, any friends of Article 15, Rocco got cast as one of the bikers in The Mayans. So that's going to be cool seeing him do, you know, a non-Article 15 movie or TV show or whatever, and see how he acts as a not playing himself.
Which may be playing himself. Who knows?
Pretty much, yeah. You know?
Like, so, awesome stuff.
So with that, check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're on the ESO network, ESOPodcast.com. I'm actually going to be recording their Ghost in the Shell review episode, so when that comes out, check that out. Want some shirts? RealMenSmokeCigars.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Cigar Nerd Pod. And with that, get to the choppers! And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.